guys, this is Jill, and welcome back to the Sports Ethos Kings podcast. We are at our all-star break fan roundtable, and I am joined by returning guests, Trevor and Meg Lou. And so thank you guys. Oh, there goes Gracie. See, as soon as I start, she goes. Never fails. Welcome back, guys, and thank you for joining me on this little all-star breakdown. But we will start off with the first question of the day, and it will be, give me your thoughts or your breakdown of the first 50 plus games of the season so far. Likes, dislikes, surprises, anything like that. Take it away.
I made like a little list of what were kind of my favorite things so far. So the first win over Golden State was a big deal, I thought. That was one that really stood out for me. The 153 point against the Nets was big. The Band-Aid. I thought the Band-Aid whole thing with the Band-Aid was hilarious and fun. And Rosé was like such a funny, good sport about it. And it was so like symbolic of the Kings, like, not getting any calls, being treated kind of like crap by the refs up until that point. And so I thought it was just a really good kind of allegory for how the season had gone so far. And then it kind of, you know, energized the fans around the team. And so I love that. The wins versus good teams have been great. Like, the Cavs win. I think, like, we've looked outclassed in certain, you know, matchups. I've actually enjoyed the back-to-back series, which, because we usually win the second game. I wish we won the first game too, but that hasn't always happened. And then for me, obviously, like, sharing the ball, passing the ball is power kind of stuff. The fact that, like, on any given night, it could be any guy who has 30 points. You know, it's not just De'Aaron or Domas. It's kind of been spread all around that some of the star, and then just the fact that they're all stars now. Those are definitely my highlights, I think, so far.
That's a very good rundown. Just kind of overall vibe from the first 50 some odd games. I mean, it's hard to get expect much more than what we've gotten. I think coming into the season, we had said, like, we just want to see a fun product on the court. And, you know, if that means wins or not, you know, whatever, we just wanted to enjoy the games. And not only did we get the fun product, but we actually got some wins that came along with it. Like, we actually got the record, the good record to go with the good play. What I do really like is, you know, sometimes you see when a team is built around like one star player and you're kind of like, well, yeah, we're all kind of, you know, sitting on the shoulders of this one guy. And obviously Sabonis and Fox have done so much, so they are a huge part of what we've done. But this team is, I mean, it really does feel like a team. I mean, and top down, like, not just, you know, the roster itself, but, you know, just the coaching staff, the front office, like, it all just kind of came together this season. I mean, even with the fans, sometimes it feels like the fans are like a little bit of a player, just in that they bring that extra element. And, you know, when the team's, you know, falls behind early at home and, you know, kind of brings them back. So it really just feels like all the vibes are just, you know, in the most positive direction, all at once, like it all clicked. Doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be like a championship team this season, but everything we could have asked for as far as like getting things onto the right track are all clicking on all cylinders. Highlights, probably the two of the games that I went to that I just like stand out the most, is the game against the Jazz where, Kevin Huerter hits that three at the end. That is probably like the one moment that stands out for me just because it was so loud in there. Like it, and I didn't go to too many games at Arco just cause it was so hard to get seats, or get tickets back then. And I was, you know, in high school, but it was just that level, it kind of hit me all at once. I was like, I think Golden 1 Center has officially like found its moment, you know, and it's found its, you know, the Thunder's back. And it was just, I mean, and especially the way that play kind of played out, where they were, you know, they were down and they were desperate for a shot, you know, missed a couple of easy layups and got the rebound. It was just like so much anticipation. So when that shot hit, I feel like so many times at Golden One Center, you would have this moment where you're like, oh man, the roof would just fall off this place if only they hit that shot, and they never hit it. So this was like the one time where it's like they actually hit the shot and just the whole place went crazy. So that was a real exciting moment. And then that Brooklyn Nets game was also just wild, because every single thing was just going their way. And it was just like sitting there almost like a dream. Like, is this happening right now? We're on national TV. We're not like making a fool out of ourselves. Like, you know, Kevin Durant is on the other end and he's getting like, you know, embarrassed out of the gym. You know, it's like, how is this? Terrence Davis has turned into like, you know, LeBron James for one night. Like, it was just crazy. And it was just, I was there with a couple of friends and we just had so much fun there. So those are definitely some of the moment highlights. But in general, I'm just really pleased with the direction of the team and how it's kind of all clicking.
Yeah, especially for that to be what, the one TNT game of the season. And it was almost a year to the date that the SNL skit of the Kings playing the Nets happened, and they had the Kings like, what was it, 107 to like zero or something. And it was like throwing fans in, right? I can't think of the guy's name at the moment, but
I know I was trying to remember his name too, but that was like perfect timing. And it's just funny too, because it's the one national game that we got. It's like, give us more national games. The time we're like, well, we have one more left on ESPN, and then that one got taken away. So
I still, like, that's still wild to me that we were at the seed we were in and had games taken away. And yet you still see these big name teams that are not doing anything and don't have their stars, and they don't get any games taken away. In fact, they've had games added. So it's wild. I saw someone actually sent me an article before I got on, that they wrote an article on small market teams and the percentage of like national games they get. And the Kings were at like 6%. And so, I mean, I was surprised he was even that high. Because I think they counted the NBA, NBA TV games, yes. Which even then, not everybody gets. So it's, agree on that. Let's see, what are some of the others? I will say, like, one thing that to me has seemed noticeably different is, normally, even when this team, like, we've had some games where it's like, oh God, is this going to be a blowout? Like, is this team going to give up? Are the heads going down? Like, we're just used to seeing 16 years of teams being like, all right, we're phoning it in for the rest of the game. We're not even going to do it. Why does Coach Brown still have these guys in the third quarter and they're down 30 points? Well, it's because they came back and won the game. That's why he still has them playing. And so there's been multiple games where I just think there's like, can they do it? Are they going to do it? They're kind of clawing back, and then they somehow, you know, find a way. And that's just something that's been different big time to years past. I think someone actually did a thing where it was the Kings actually had the least amount of games resulted in blowouts. And they were like one of the leading teams of where of like close games. And so they've been in everything. You know, they're not getting blown out. Yes, they've had some blowouts of other teams, but I think we see that too based on, I know we all watch other teams' games, but I watched one last night where there was a 30-point lead in the third quarter, and with 2 minutes left to go, it was a 4-point game. So, I mean, we're not used to it, but we're used to it. Like, it's still weird to see when you think that it's just that easy to come back from 30-point games now. But there's a whole like Twitter account designated to like not your team or not my team or whatever. And it's like every night there's a team coming back from a blowout with like just over a quarter left. And so it's been nice to see this team never giving up. They kind of have taken that attitude of, you know, we're never out of a game, which I appreciate. They've seemingly really bought in, right, to what Monty and Coach Brown are trying to do here. You know, even the Sabonis interview in The Athletic today, he was talking about how excited he was just to represent Sacramento. And out of all his All-Star appearances, this is his most favorite so far because it's from here and he knows how much it means to the city and the fans, and that he's excited he can represent this. And it's something he wants to do, like he said, you know, for the rest of his career, essentially. So that was, you know, nice to hear from him that, again, he referenced to the point where it was like, I want to be here. And it sounds like the only way I'm not going to be here is if they trade me, because he referenced how the Suns players didn't want to leave either, but they were sent away. So he knows that it's a business. It can happen. But similar to what we all kind of know, that he loves it here and his family loves it here, that he does want to see himself in a Kings jersey for a long time. And so, again, that's another exciting thing to me in the first 50 games that, you know, like you're selling these players, you know, and Fox like is the same way. Like they want to be here. You've heard Herter say he wants to keep building here. Monk, I want to keep building here. All these, you know, guys that you consider part of your core saying they want to keep building this thing out. The coaching staff saying the same thing. So just outside of the games in general, it's nice to not see the drama right on the other side. Like we're seeing, you know, we're used to around this time. Last year, the Kings were at 22 wins. And, you know, every other day, it's like you're getting a tweet about some sort of behind the scenes drama that's going on of, you know, who's trying to take control and all these things. So it's just nice not being that and just being like a normal franchise for 50 plus games that we haven't seen in a while. So not necessarily totally on the court, but just nice to have like as a whole for the organization that. That's been a complete plus and a fave moment of this season. Can you guys think of any other favorite moments that you have? I think you pretty much listed some good ones. I mean, the Orlando comeback with Fox. I was sick, and so I didn't even see the second half. I taped it and ended up being able to watch it later. But that was probably the first game where I realized, like, holy crap, these guys, like, they're not giving up. Like, okay. I mean, cause that was pretty early in the season. And I think it was Sabonis in the Slam magazine article said that was the game that it changed. He felt for the team that it was like, we can do that. Like, it doesn't matter how much we're down, like we can do this and we believe in ourselves. So I think that was another big one. Keegan hitting all his threes. I mean, that just, you know, proving
I think mine are more wrong. More general too, like the fact that we're like 7 games over .500, that we have winning records and like at home, away, not in our division or in our division but not our conference or whatever it is, conference but not division.
Yeah, but I mean, to your point right there, the Kings and the Clippers are the only two teams in the Western Conference that have a winning record at home and away.
I mean, that's crazy, right? And our point differential's really good. I mean, those are like Hubie Brown kind of milestones of like being over 500, having a good point differential. I know those are kind of an old school thought process, but I still think they work. I still think they apply. And yeah, I just think, I guess also the other kind of really general one is I think most of our role players have exceeded expectations. I mean, there's some that obviously have not or have not gotten the chance to. But you know, I think you could even make the case that like Chemezi has like put in some good minutes when he's been, you know, allowed to. He's had some bad minutes too, but I mean, or Trey Lyles, I mean, guys that I didn't totally expect to be really good functional parts of the team have stepped up. And that's one of my favorite things is I love rooting for underdogs. That's a lot of the reason why I'm a Kings fan is I like the long shot, you know? So, yeah, I just think, like you said, it's like gumption and it's, you know, they have really showed grit in like many of the game time situations. And then as a group, they've gotten better and better and better. So I'm hoping that continues down the stretch. But so far they exceeded like every expectation I had. So.
Yeah, when you look at last year's record at this time, 22 and 38, they're full 10 games up at 32 and 25. Like we say, just to end the season, how hard it is to get like a 10 game swing. I mean, they have it, you know, what is it? 57 games through the season? I mean, so that's just incredibly impressive in itself. I mean, like you said, like keep it going, you know, for these next 25. But again, what they've been able to do to this point, I mean, a 10 game swing through 57 games is damn impressive.
Yeah. And to that point, too, about, you know, thinking about Chemezi, it made me think, you know, obviously the team still has some holes and, you know, isn't as deep as it could be. But I think looking at the depth this season compared to previous years, just having like essentially, you know, two teams worth of competent players that can actually are good enough to take a floor in an NBA game, you know, having 8 to 10 players that you feel comfortable being out there every night, getting like rotational minutes. I mean, really, I think they have more than that, but those are just the ones who are playing. I think has made a big difference, because I was thinking back to the start of the year, and I think a lot of us probably forget, but like the first 5 or 6 games of the year, I think Sabonis was like really bad. Like, and everybody was like, oh, it was all back to the trade again. And everybody was just like losing their minds. We were 0-4, and he was just kind of like, I don't even know if bad is the right word, but he was starting really slow. And Malik Monk also started really slow. And then it was pretty much when I think those two started to take off is really when the team started to take off. And then since, you know, throughout this year, I feel like there's always like at least one player at one point who's struggling, as is going to happen in an NBA season. And before that used to be like the death sentence. It's like, well, everybody's got to be, you know, clicking on all cylinders every night. If, you know, Buddy misses shots one night, we're done. Or, you know, if, you know, De'Aaron's not ready to play 40 minutes a night, you know, we're done. Now it's kind of like, well, so-and-so can have a bad stretch for 2 weeks. And, you know, somebody else just took their place and kind of filled in the void. And that's kind of what it seems like this team's doing. I mean, it's really that like next man up mentality, or, you know, the whole like, I got your back thing. It really seems to translate on the court. Like, there's never a time really where all of them are struggling once. Like, we're all, you know, 10 guys are just playing badly. Like, there might be one or two that are going through something, but then there's one or two others that are having a really hot stretch. And it's kind of how it's just kind of played out. So you're not relying on everybody to have a hot hand, but you're also not having anybody that's like the whole team not cold at once. Like, somebody's at least contributing. And even the people that are having cold shooting are still finding ways to contribute in other ways. Like, you know, Kevin Herter has been struggling with the shot for like a couple months now, but he's doing all kinds of other things, rebounding better and, you know, scoring at two pointers and, you know, just keeping everything moving. And when Keegan Murray was struggling, you know, he was picking up his rebounding, even though he wasn't hitting as many shots, and it made him valuable enough to keep on the floor. So I think just having that kind of roster where you can afford to have a couple of guys kind of struggling and not bringing the team down with it has been big.
Yeah. And then even to the point too, where they also accept coaching, right? Like, you see it during the game where Brown can get in their face or be teaching or something, but they're taking it in and they're not taking it in a bad way. Like, they've all said, they understand it. It's coming from a place of love. And I know you can do this. And like, you know, you need to do it. We need you to do it. Like, you know, let's figure it out. But for anyone that didn't read the Sabonis interview today with Athletic with Sam Amick, what you said, something that made me think of it, Trevor, was that how the beginning of the season Sabonis kind of struggled. He mentioned something in that article about he was saying that this wasn't a bad thing, but him and Brown had to learn each other at the beginning. And he said when he came in, like, and that during the coaching search, he had some strong ideas of what he thought, you know, so this is Sabonis, of how he should be used and things like that. And he said that, and Brown had an idea, his own idea of how he thought that Sabonis should be used. And he said it kind of clashed a little bit, but the fact that they grew that trust in each other, and Sabonis was saying like, I had to prove I could do this, to be like, hey, I can do this. And he's like, and then Jordy came from Denver working with, you know, Jokic, like, so that it's, he knew, you know, by, you know, we always say like a Jokic light, like, right, that he's a Joker light. But that he said that he could see the difference in Brown as he saw Sabonis doing things, and that Brown didn't stay hard headed and no, I want it to be this way because this is how I want it. It's like, no, I'm trusting you now. And he said in like watching game film, he said that he'd started pointing it out more and saying, good job, and, you know, keep doing this and this thing. And so he said like that And again, he emphasized none of it was ever bad. It was, you know, because he said, I've gone through this with every coach. And he's like, you know, and sometimes you forget. And then it's like, oh, yeah, we got to go through this again. But he was like, it's a building, you know, piece to each other and you learning each other and you learning to trust each other. And he's like, and I went out there and showed it, you know, why I deserve this trust. And then there were things that Brown wanted where Sabonis said, I had to then learn how to trust him and know that that was, you know, the best for me in these scenarios. And so it was nice hearing that kind of, you know, interconnectivity type thing. And then, because we've had coaches where would not be receptive to that. And we've had players that would not be receptive to that and would close off pretty quick if it's, you know, wasn't what they wanted. So again, I thought that was nice to kind of read in here, but, and it went to your point of you're seeing that kind of from everybody, you're seeing that trust and then that in the players and the coaching staff in themselves. All right. So we'll go next to what are your guys' thoughts on the deadline? And are there any buyout candidates that strike your fancy?
I think I was probably pretty conservative. I'm pretty conservative, like naturally when it comes to trades. And I just wasn't as high on some of the, you know, guys that were being talked about. Like, I don't think Mason Plumlee is going to save us or that we even necessarily want to play 48 minutes of center hub basketball. Like, I don't, you know, I think changing it up and having a different look at center is kind of a good thing. Personally, I feel like our main weakness is small forward. I don't think we have a natural small forward. So my, you know, the guys that I liked most were like Matisse. I like Vanderbilt because I think you could get away with playing him at three defensively. And you could swap him out as a small ball center. I think he's pretty versatile. So those were my two top guys. And then like Naz Reid, who didn't get moved anyways. And there was one other that I can't remember off the top of my head. Oh, I mean, I love Jay Crowder. But I know it's complicated. Like he hasn't played all year and who knows what that is. And he wanted to go to a contender and all that kind of stuff. But I just loved him because the first year the Suns were good, he would tell DeAndre Ayton where to be on the floor. Like he would always be on the floor with DeAndre and he would always tell him exactly where to go. So I just think he's a really smart basketball player and he's like a thick dude and we never have a thick dude, you know, like, we need more thick dudes. So if that ever happens, that'll be nice. But I mean, I wasn't like upset or I really don't think like that was going to like bring us to some new like height of, you know, like, oh, we're definitely going to be the first seed now or anything like that. Like, I love Matisse. Yeah. I mean, I think his defense would have helped us. Would he have gotten us more than like two more wins? I don't know. Like, not that, you know, and like a lot of these guys, I think depending on what happens with the teams they went to, I think they may be available anyway in the off season. And again, depending on what kind of money they want and all that stuff, like there might be better options available in the off season too. And a lot of it just hinges for me on the Harrison Barnes thing, whether he stays or we, you know, try and quote upgrade him in the off season. So that's my long-winded take on the trade deadline.
Yeah, and to your point too, before you go, Trevor, too, where you mentioned the offseason, something too that I don't know if people have noticed that the Pacers pick is getting a lot better. And this is something that we know Monty tried to do last year was jump back into the first, right? Like he tried to get Malachi and the Spurs ended up taking him. It was a no. I don't know what he offered, but I know he did try and get back in there for him. So, you know, having a high 30s pick paired with other things could be opportunity to even maybe try and jump back in. You know, when you think about all of these seconds and not using them, you know, there could be ways where you could have more options now, maybe that you wouldn't have.
Around at the rookies this year too and see the guys like I think everybody, you know, there's like that saying of like, well, you never find guys in the 20s, like who cares about those picks or whatever. like the championship teams always pick there. They always find guys. They're always like lauded for getting, oh, that guy is such a Spurs guy. That guy is such a Bucks guy, whatever. Like, would I want Marjon Beauchamp on our team? Yeah. Like, that's a great fucking pick, you know, excuse my language, but, or I mean, look at Walker Kessler. I mean, if you could even get into like 22, 23, I think you could solve a rim protector problem and bring someone along kind of slowly. And, you know, who knows like where Oscar Tshiebwe or whatever is going to go. Like, I just think there's guys there that so far, you know, and I'm still a Davion fan, so I'm saying this, you know, with that in mind, I think that Monty is a great talent evaluator in the draft. And so I think he can get something good in those middle rounds and even early second round and even maybe late second round, you know, depending on how much development that needs. I love Keon too. So there you go.
Yeah. So I think it's funny because I think we might be like, I feel like we're not an accurate representation in here of like at least what I've seen on King's Twitter, because it was ablaze during the deadline. But I feel the same way. I didn't necessarily have high expectations. Just, you know, realistically thinking we don't have a whole lot of valuable pieces that we're willing to part with. I know sometimes Monty's gotten creative and been able to, you know, woo some GMs into some stuff. But for the most part, you know, I think it's also different when you're actually a decent team. You know, some of the teams that are that you might be working with are teams that might be, you know, trying to compete with you. You know, like the Timberwolves, for example, like they might still be trying to move up in the draft up in the seeding. So like they're not going to want to give us anybody for a draft pick because that's going to help us right now. And just in general, yes, we have some pieces that are missing, some areas that need improvement. And so it would have been nice to add some depth there and improve the team. But I just don't think it would have been worth giving up anything of value or significance for the right deal, maybe. But overall, I do think that there's going to be more going on this off season. And at that point, you also will have a better idea of your team. You will see if these players are, you know, what they've seemed to have been so far this year as this most important games come around the potential postseason. You'll see if, you know, some of these players maybe crumble under the pressure or maybe rise to the occasion. You know, there's still guys like Keon Ellis and maybe Keita that may have a way of contributing at some point this year. You know, another 30 games or so to see if they might work their way into the rotation. I mean, Ellis looks like he's kind of starting to work his way in a little bit. And maybe if, you know, if he can become a member of the rotation, then maybe next season, that's a cheap way you can get away with a backup three. And then now you don't have to go out and pay for one. And I think this is something that we had kind of talked about a little bit on Twitter. But basically, I think Monty won the offseason. And I think when you win the offseason, it gives you the ability to play it a little bit safer during the season. I think a lot of these other big moves, I mean, granted, like getting Kevin Durant is awesome, regardless of the situation. But some moves are a little bit out of like desperation. Like, I really screwed up the offseason. I need to make a big splash and maybe give up some pieces to make something happen just to save our season and give us a chance and get the fans back on our side and all that sort of thing. Monty already did that. So, I mean, not to say mission accomplished and hang up your banner and call it a day, but it's a little bit less of a dire situation. He had a goal to have a playoff team. You know, a team that's, you know, going to bring fans back in and be exciting to watch. And for the most part, he's done all that. And at least that's where the direction it's going in. And now he just has to see it play out. And then next, once the offseason comes, he can reevaluate there, see who's available in free agency. Now you've made Sacramento a little bit more of a attractive destination. We're not, you know, there's some people who are probably just never going to come here, but at least the people like Sabonis that are just coming to see, like, they want to play basketball for a good fan base with some talented players. Now you have two all-stars. You have this crazy culture, you know, with the Beam and everything. And then just in, you know, that's enough to draw in, I think, a lot of players, maybe not the superstars, but players that are going to make your team significantly better for the, you know, next season. Okay. And then regarding buyout candidates, first of all, I will say, we'll see if Dougie McCormick's available. I finally found his name. It was driving me crazy what his name was from the SNL skit. Or Alicia Miller, that was the other one. We'll see if either of them's available. I don't know. I was looking at a list of buyout candidates, you know, some of these articles that go around, and it's just funny seeing some of the names that are triggering, like Dwayne Dedman and there. I even saw like Frank Kaminsky on one list. I'm like, is that even worthy of a considered a buyout candidate? Like, I don't know. But I was like, he couldn't even crack our roster when we were bad. So but I don't know. I think someone like a Kevin Love would be awesome, but I don't think that's even like a possibility, but he does seem like he would fill a role. When I think about what we need there, I think about like, obviously just probably just bench players and, you know, it's like you could go for someone to provide some defense, which we need. But at this point, it's like, do we even try to put someone in for 15 minutes of defense, or do we just go all in and make the bench offense as good as the starting offense? And, you know, to kind of cover for when people are out. I don't know. I think if I had to mention someone, I would probably say like Will Barton seems like somebody that has some, you know, playoff experience, and his numbers are a little bit down this year with, was he with the Wizards, I think. And so I don't know what we can necessarily expect out of him, but, you know, just kind of that caliber of player that's had, you know, been around and can provide something on the court and probably something off the court, you know, somebody like that I think would be ideal. Mostly, I think my list of buyout candidates, I have a lot of no's. As yeses, I could kind of go either way on, but there are some people that I'm like, I'm good. You know, so I could give you that list. But as far as potential buyout candidates, I'm pretty open just to seeing, you know, taking a flyer on anybody that could maybe help the team. But there are a few people that I would probably say, like, I'm good on that one. But I won't insult those people.
Yeah. And to your point for Will Barton, I think too, as part of it was they have so many wings and they were kind of prioritizing the young guys to see what they had. You saw them end up making trades and things like that. And so whether it be age or, you know, at this point in his career or that, but experience wise, it sure seems like he could come in and give you 10 minutes if you needed it, you know, that kind of thing. Being on Denver all that time. I mean, he's been in those big time situations and would know. So I agree there. When it comes out to the deadline itself, I know most people know, like, I was a huge, like, I've wanted Vando on this team for like 2+ years. And having him back with Fox would have been really cool. Fox is one of his best friends. He mentored him before Vando went to Kentucky. Like, it just would have been a cool story. And he fitted like a need that this team had. And Amick was on 1140 this morning with Carmichael Dave. And it almost even hurt worse because he was like, the Kings thought they, again, it was another one where the Kings thought they had him. It was very similar to the Kuzma thing. The Kings thought they had Vando, like, and this was before all the crazy trades went on, right? So no one was offering four second rounders, five or anything like that. It was, they could have had him for two. Like, that was what was being talked about. But then when the other teams came in, the opportunity to move Beasley, to move Vando, and to move Connolly, why we help these big name teams, I don't know. But it was essentially like, okay, well, we were going to work this with you, but now we're going to do the bigger deal. And it was one of those things where Sam was like, I mean, you can criticize him, I guess, for not getting the guy, but you're also not in those phone calls. And they're very well, like, could have been nothing that could have been done. Like, you know, that it was just the opportunity to move those pieces was just too good. And they got Damian Jones back, who they're playing, and they got Juan Toscano-Anderson, who they're playing. The Kings weren't throwing any of that stuff out there. So, and that becomes to the point too, where then what else would they have come back with and offered? You have people saying, well, why didn't you throw out these picks and that? And if they threw out a first, you probably would have had people complaining they threw out a first. They sent Davion, you would have had people complaining they sent Davion. They would have had people complaining they sent Davis. Like, there's always going to be complaining about something. But I'll stick with what Sam said was, we can critique all we want, but we don't even know 25% of the conversations that are had. It's really easy to say, oh, you throw one more second round pick and the deal gets done. But that's not how it totally always works, that it's there's much more nuance to it. So I think just like when you're going through this, remembering that it just sucks that twice Westbrook was part of a trade that we thought we had somebody. And then going to it, the same thing James Hamm said, they thought they had Thybulle 30 minutes prior to that deal being completed, and they did it. So, I mean, I guess if you're going to criticize Monty for anything, it's thinking you have someone and then you don't. Like, you have to, again, we don't know those conversations. So I don't know if the other team said like, yeah, we're good. Like, we don't need to have any more conversations. Like, we're good. And then someone else swoops in and then you're not even given an opportunity to even maybe come back with something. They could have just said, oh, we're moving on. And he could not, maybe there wasn't even an opportunity for him to say, oh, well, what if I do this? Like, would you take this instead? So again, we just don't know. So as much as I'm kind of upset we didn't get those guys, I still understand that there's a lot more than we ever, you know, are ever told and we'll ever know. And then that's kind of the same thing I felt where you were talking about, Meg, with Crowder. I felt that same way about Josh Richardson, and he was doing it yesterday with the Pelicans against the Lakers, pointing people out. I want you to go here. I want you to do this. Same kind of thing where he was another one where he could play point guard through small forward. So it just would have been a extra depth at all three of those positions if you ever needed it down the stretch, and he could play defense. So, but again, like you mentioned, all these guys are available right in the offseason. So yes, you didn't get your kind of head start in trying to sell them on this place, but finish out the season doing what you're supposed to be doing. And that can be just as much of an audition as anything else. I mean, they could end up hating where they, you know, where they got sent to, and it wasn't what they thought it was going to be. And, you know, I kind of like what this team over here is doing something. And that just to think too, that none of us thought the Kings would be in this position of where they are right now. And so I can understand Monty being like, we're where we wanted to be without having to give anything up. I'm still trying to shore up step two, step three, step four. And I think, Meg, you even mentioned this. The move I didn't make today could set up the move, you know, two moves from now. I know we all hate like the wait and see, but sometimes the move not made ends up being the best thing that you could have done for the next move that's now available in the offseason or next trade deadline.
Okay, reading Jerry's book, the Reynolds Remembers book, he has like a whole section where he talks about like deals that they made or mistakes that they made, but then that led to like other deals like 2 years down the road. And like they didn't know that was going to happen at the time, but it was part of establishing a relationship with another GM. Is a totally different time, right? So it's a different situation. But anybody who thinks that like Mitch Kupchak would do the same deal with Monty that he would do with Jerry West just doesn't know very much basketball history. I mean, in my opinion, like they have an established relationship, you know? They know exactly what the other one's trying to do. And to me, if you're a GM, you always make the deal with Jerry West. Jerry West is Jerry West. Like,
I agree.
So I don't know. You know, it is what it is. Like, I know a lot of people have gotten like the never too high, never too low thing has never meant more to me than this season. Like, people really have bottomed out on weird stuff, in my opinion, you know, or topped out on also some weird stuff. So.
Well, I mean, you look at how people were last deadline to now. I mean, right? For a lot of people, the sky was falling and look where they are now. I mean, so you just don't know, right? You just don't know. So, yeah. I totally agree. And so that's more my frustration after everyone and lost. It's like, okay, we're back to this again. Like, is this what we're going to do the rest of the season? Like, can't we just enjoy what we're doing right now? Like, none of us thought we'd be here. I get it. But like, this is our team. Can we move on with our team and, you know, go as is?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Like, it's kind of like, there's no reason to keep harping on it. Like, yeah, like it would have been cool to get like, you know, a Vanderbilt even, like, you know, that would have been great. But like, it, even as good as he is, you know, and as much as he could probably contribute, it's like, you know, maybe it gets,
it's not like they turned down Kevin Durant.
Right. It's like, this wasn't, you know, like, and these are like, you know, for SAC, these are like big moves, you know, but like, really, is anybody else looking at this going to be like, are you going to really, you know, lose your mind over the fact that we missed out on Vanderbilt? Like, you know, let's all cry and for, you know, take our 2 minutes and cry out that the Lakers screwed us over again on a deal. Yeah,
and we weren't the only teams that missed out on him. Like, there were other Philadelphia, there were other contenders that were trying to do it too. So it wasn't like Monty was the clown in the situation. Like, he might have been the closest, but they were very much other contending teams that missed out, you know, and didn't get it.
I mean, for them too, I think the primary goal was to get off Conley's deal, right? I mean, and they only had like $4 million contracts that were even movable. So
it sets them up for next year.
That it was Vanderbilt. It thought the money had to work for the trades to work.
Yep.
And if your main goal is to get off the big money old guy, which it should be in a rebuilding team, then you do that, right? So, I mean, I specifically looked up their cap sheet because I was like, okay, well, how does this make sense? Would we have had a chance? But they don't have, like, the Lakers aren't going to take back Rudy Gay. Like, he's washed. So, you know, I mean, it's just, you have to think about all the different levels of it too, especially from the GM standpoint. He has to look at the money. He has to function under the cap.
Right.
And I know people have like gone overboard on that too, but it is, you know, we're not going to go into the luxury tax to have, you know, an okay team. Like, that doesn't make sense. So anyways.
Yeah. And I mean, even with the Spurs one with Josh Richardson, it was the same thing. They didn't want to take on Holmes money. Like, I get it. You can't force it. Like, that's the money that would have had to match. And I don't blame him for not wanting it. Like,
money. Like, right. That's because he's probably going to opt into his player option. Right. I still love Rashawn. I'm not down on him. But also, like, that's one thing to note. Josh Richardson is great. He makes $12 million a year. So,
right.
He's not in the same money conversation that most of these other guys are, where they're making like $4.5 million. You know, I know that's not that big of a deal for 1 year. And I don't know how many, if Josh Richardson expires.
He expires. This was his last year. Yeah.
Yeah.
So they didn't want to take money on. And that was the thing, is they got seconds for him and they're not taking any extra money going into next year and the year after, which is what would have happened here. So, yeah.
So it's complicated. The buyout, I wanted to say too, I have the same. My only two guys would be Will Barton or Sean Cunningham sort of sold me on Stanley Johnson. Other night.
Yep. Yep.
The other guys, like, no, I don't really want Patrick Beverly or Nerlens Noel. Not that they're not fine, but like, I guess the other consideration that I have about all of these conversations is like, where are you finding these minutes, right? Like, you're bringing in this specific player type. If you bring in a three, you're displacing one of the guards, right? You're moving those minutes around again. So that means you're not playing TD, or you're playing Malik less, or you're playing Davion even less. Or so it's like, it gets really complicated. And I feel like, to a certain extent, to what Trevor said earlier, like, we kind of know these players better than Mike Brown does to a certain extent. Like, I feel like we have a better concept of who Rashawn Holmes is. And I'm not capping on Mike Brown for not using him more, but I'm just saying, like, I feel like us as fans who have watched him for 2 to 3 years just know his game. We know he's a pick and roll guy. We would know exactly how to use him. Mike Brown has had this entire team on his plate of figuring out, like you said, from DeMontis down, who are these guys? And that's a process. And
developing that trust. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm not trying to criticize Brown at all, but I feel like there's useful pieces that already aren't getting minutes, right?
So yeah, and I do wonder if the Metu piece is, he's very familiar with Metu and that trust could be there. And I know, I think it was James that mentioned on D'Lo and KC's show that he had the honest conversation with Metu, like when he sat him for that time, like, if you're not changing this, like, it's like it's done. Like we can't afford to wait around and find out. And so to me, it almost seems like he's giving that extra leash because they do. He has that trust with them, you know, through years, which we see with coaches and teams all over, that there are guys that trust is just there. Will that end up changing? I guess we'll find out. But to your point, I think that is kind of where he's going.
Yeah, let's hope. I mean, you know, even if he runs these guys ragged into the playoffs and then sees what they can do, though, I think that in itself is progress, right? Because they get there exhausted. They have to, like, you know, the Stephen Marbury get to the next level, to the next level, to the next level thing. And so, I mean, he can then judge what levels they have. You know what I mean? Like, I'm going to guess that De'Aaron Fox is just an awesome freaking playoffs player. But I would have guessed that about, like, Kyle Lowry, too. So who really knows? You know, a lot of these guys we have not seen in that situation yet. So I really think that is going to be it's going to have some influence on roster decisions in the future, I guess, is how I would put it.
Yeah, I agree. And again, to go back to the article today from Sabonis, he mentioned specifically the Suns, this last Suns game and the loss. And he said that after the game, they all came back, you know, in high spirits, like, yeah, they lost, but it's like, okay, like the next 25, we know this is how it's going to be. We know, like, we're not satisfied. We know every game's going to feel like a playoff game. We might have been to the playoffs individually, but we haven't had this experience together and to, you know, to learn each other in these kind of high pressure situation circumstances. But that was kind of game one of, like, between Dallas and Phoenix, here we go, guys. And that we're coming back ready and we can do this. And so to your point, like, that experience in itself, I think I agree with you. That can be huge going forward with this core group.
Yeah. And one thing I'll say to that too is that's one thing I'm really encouraged by with this team is how during those back-to-back scenarios, they've won the second game every time. I think two or three of them, they also won the first, but I feel like that kind of they make good adjustments. And I think that bodes well for something like a playoff series. You know, not to say they're going to, you know, go really super far in the playoffs, but I think that bodes well for not necessarily getting swept and maybe making competitive no matter who you play is. And you may ultimately lose the next game too, but I think you'll see what went wrong and the coaching staff will make some plans and the players will come out with a better game plan the next day. And so I'm hoping that there are some more back-to-backs coming up that are very important as the season goes on, even before the playoffs. So I think that's going to be interesting to see how that goes. But I think the better roster that you can have to be able to make those adjustments, the better, because sometimes that adjustment might be personnel wise, like, this wasn't a good matchup, so next game we're going to play this other person and maybe not completely replace that player, but, you know, distribute the minutes a little bit differently, or maybe you know you're not even replacing anybody, but you're having the bench rely on, you know, you're using the bench a little bit more in the next game because, you know, the starters are gassed, or, you know, that sort of thing. So I think sometimes when you look at these, thinking about, like, adding players on, I think a lot of times people kind of look at, like, well, who are they going to replace? And rightfully so, to a degree. But I think a lot of it is also kind of just like, it's another piece in there to work in for the right matchup. And also, if someone gets hurt, now you're not, like, forcing Davion to start and play 30 minutes and hope he finds some offense. You know, now it's like, well, you know, maybe Davion can continue to be his defensive mind because now we have someone else who can fill in on the scoring side, you know. So it's just kind of like another weapon in your arsenal, I guess. And really, mostly my concern is not running the starters into the ground by the time we hit April, just because, I mean, you can kind of tell sometimes that De'Aaron Fox, I mean, that's what makes it so impressive. Like, you can tell he's gassed, you know, that he's taking breaks every chance he can get, you know, when the play's not happening, but somehow he just turns it on in the fourth quarter. But he's got to be tired. I mean, especially now with the baby. And then Sabonis, you know, is just so banged up with the way people, you know, tear him apart on the court. And obviously he's got the injury. So anyway, just having that extra depth in there, I think makes a big difference.
Yeah. And I know we mentioned, I know you guys mentioned Stanley Johnson. But one thing to me that's interesting about him is you could play him essentially at from 3 to 5. Like he's one of those where he can be that small ball center, like just because he can play down low with those guys. I mean, you're not going to be throwing him against like Adams necessarily, right? But he can get in there in those kind of small ball situations. But he's also someone that's got a good amount of minutes, you know, for a Spurs team. To me, where if you're going to keep Len just to have him sit there and he's never going to play, to me, I'd kind of rather take a shot on a younger player who's been playing throughout the season, who you might be able to trust to be able to throw in there. And you can put him in multiple different positions. Like he's not just slated where like Len is, he can only be that five, where a guy like Johnson, he's a little bit more versatile. So you can play him in different scenarios. So to me, and if there's a shot that Len could get picked up somewhere else and actually get some playing time, I feel bad for the guy in the sense that I think he got one start randomly and then you just don't see him. And he's been nothing but a complete pro and a vet and no issues and you don't hear anything about it. But in that sense, if there's something else out there where he could get, you know, a shot to play somewhere else, and we could, you know, if there's a scenario out there where you could get something and then he has a shot, to me, it seems like it'd be beneficial for both parties if you could do something like that. Even for, I was a big KZ fan, right, going into this, but he's also been hurt and we just never see the guy either. So to me, could you have KZ? I mean, could you have a guy like Stanley Johnson over KZ who you're not playing and you're not even, and you can't play him in the G League right now because he has something with his knee, like that it's, I don't know. If there's just other ways that you could kind of work this right now, I think there are multiple roster spot options where you could still fill in some pieces, whether it be a Stanley Johnson or a Barton or something, that that there's ways you could get him in here. I mean, it's just selling, it's selling him on it here.
Yeah, they just need some size in there. Like, I mean, they need floor spreading size. So I get not playing KZ. I do. I feel the same way. I'm super high on him. And I don't mind as much like having offenseless players. I think a part of the problem, you know, for Davion has been that as soon as Fox goes out, his gravity goes out. So it's just really hard to like absorb that gravity when you're not making shots. So I don't know. It's complicated and it's a balancing issue, I think, too. But yeah, I agree. If there is some way, especially a three, to me, like we do not have a three. We've been basically playing Kessler. Keegan and Kessler. Kevin. Yeah, I mean, I loved his minutes. I try not to get too high on, like, you know, 2 minutes, like, or if it even was. Yeah, I don't know. You know, on the other side of that, though, like, I'm not going to be, like, upset if they don't get somebody on the buyout market either. Like I said, like, I think we also need to trust the guys that have gotten us here. And if they can't like hold the fort and like get us in the real playoffs, then obviously there's changes that need to be made and improvements. You know what I mean? But if they can, like, great, and reward them, like, you know, extend some of them. Like, I don't know. I mean, I love the thought of being loyal to some of these guys who came in on like bargain basement contracts, like, and have totally balled out. You know, like Trey Lyles, I think he hasn't been super consistent, but he's been a great role player. I mean, you know, and he's had some fantastic games. Like, I would love to see him back again, like, depending on what happens with Harrison and all that other stuff. But you know, we are where we are because these guys have worked their butts off to get there. So I think that that deserves some like recognition and loyalty and minutes, really, you know, and play time. So
I think all that is, I agree. And Stanley Johnson's a great choice too. I should have mentioned him because when I saw that he was waived, I was kind of looking at him a little bit, and I guess the Lakers were trying to get him, but
it was because they waived him, not traded him, that you can't pick him up for a full season, I believe, is how it worked. And so they literally can't re-sign him because it hasn't been a full year. I will throw out another name and I know, like, completely random. Most people will probably never know who this is, but Terry Taylor. And Mike Malone called him, I think he called him a man child, like that, because he's one of those where he's like a Stanley Johnson type size. But the Pacers last year, because of injuries and stuff, were having to play him at center. And so he is what Meg likes to call. He's a thick boy. He's big. But he can he can spread the floor. But like, they had him guarding Jokic and he had like 14 rebounds on him. And this is 6'6" type player. I mean, but he's big and he can get in there and can do it. And so there were other people around the league wondering if someone was going to claim him, because he is again, a second year player, but has those intangibles that someone could be looking for. One of the best rebounders that by far on this list, if you need rebounding, Kings, like, he is the best rebounder that's on the buyout market. So just some other, you know, a random name to throw out there, but he was the shining, you know, star of like the G League showcase that they just had and all that stuff. But he's one where the last 2 years was going back and forth, and because the Pacers were rebuilding, unfortunately, because they kept Turner, like, he ended up being the odd man out when it came to the trade deadline. And they were saying like, it was really hard to actually to cut him, but they just, I mean, it was once Hill said he was staying, like, it, you know, they wanted to do right by him and retire him as a Pacer. And so, you know, a developing player, as we've seen, you know, before, ends up getting the short end of the stick. But I mean, if you go watch that dude, like, Meg, go watch him, like, you will love him. But I just, I'm like, that he's getting stuff, 14, yeah. He's getting 14 rebounds on the Joker. Like, it's no big deal. And well, Mike Malone was just like, who is this dude? He is awesome.
It's funny, because I almost, like, the guys that we're talking about almost fit like a Chima Maneki mold. Like, Chima was also one of the leading rebounders in G League. Like, so I get letting him go for the versatility of having the open roster space. And I get all of the reasoning behind it, but I'm also an Aggie, so it was like pretty disappointing that he didn't work out. Like, I was really rooting for him. I watched all of his G League games. I thought he played fantastic, and he's such like an energizer bunny. I know he's not a true three, but he's sort of like one of those guys who's like a small forward size, but he plays like a center. You know, and he gave me like very Charles Barkley vibes. Anyways, that was like one of my disappointments of the season, I guess. You know, there, and there's only been a few, so poor one out for Chima Maneki, I guess.
Yeah, and he just went back and signed. I don't know if it was the last team he played for, but he's already out in Europe playing again and having fun. So
I think he's in France. I think he may be on the same team as Kyle Guy, weirdly. Maybe. I could be wrong about that. I haven't tracked that down yet. I will eventually, though.
Last thoughts on the remaining 25 games of the season. What are your desired outcomes of the next 25? Mine's stay in the top six and make the playoffs. Like, I don't care if you're sixth, but just try not to get the play in. Like, let's get an actual playoff, so we can say we ended this and go. But finish 500 and be in the top six.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, everything so far has exceeded my expectations. So yeah, stay over five. Try to play over 500 ball. I mean, if I were going to like elevate those expectations a little bit, I would say maybe try and get a couple more like quality wins against like contender teams. But I'm not even asking for that. Like, maybe two, you know, like if we could conquer the Suns, like that would be really exciting, I think. Something like that. And then beyond that, like, yeah, just try and go 500, try and stay in the top six. Do not by any stretch of the imagination let the Lakers catch you, which I don't think they can anyways, but
yeah, they have to go. They have to go 17-6. If we go one win below 500, they have to go 17-6 to catch us. So again, yeah, like if you said, if you stay 500, like, I mean, they have to go 18-5.
I think that's going to be rough. I don't think they're going to stay healthy either. That's my hope anyways. But yeah, I mean, so just really, really, like, I would say reasonable hopes and expectations is what I have. Just keep doing what you're doing. Stay on course, you know?
Yep, I agree. I think it's funny, everybody going in is, once the deadline kind of happened and all the other teams got better, everybody was like, well, let's just stay in the, try to stick to the top six. And I'm over here like, no, let's try to get up to two. Like, well, you know, why not? But no, but realistically, I guess my sort of, ultimate goal. I mean, ultimate goal is, yes, just make the playoffs, even if it had to be in the play-in, like whatever you have to do to actually get into the playoffs, to do it. But I really do want to avoid the play-in. So I'm like, please find a way to finish top six. But I would love top four, because then it just buys you, start the game off at, you know, start this playoff series at Golden One Center, reward the fans, you know, because, like, you know, that first playoff game, whenever it happens, is going to be nuts. And so I'm like, you know, if it was actually the first game of the playoffs too, like, that would be even more, like, special, I think, as opposed to, like, you've already seen two on the road and now they're home. That's cool too. I don't care how it has to be done, but anyway, I'm still kind of like, let's see if we can find a way to not only make the playoffs, but, like, go all in and get the home court advantage too for the first round. So we'll see. Conquering the Suns would be awesome though, just because we'll see, depending the outcome of tonight. But no team in the Pacific Division has even beaten the Suns this year. It's crazy. They're like 9-0. We'll see what the Clippers do with them tonight. But that's just crazy to me. It's like wild. So in general, the Kings don't have a great record against the teams. I think I was looking at earlier, 5-6. So against the teams within their division, even though they're in first place, which is kind of crazy. So I would like to see them maybe just play a little bit better against those teams, with the games they have left. I know that I think they don't have a whole lot left in their division.
Even to your point, if you just look at the teams below them, like in the standings, 15 out of their 25 games are against teams that are below them. So, like you said, take care of business.
Yeah.
And just doing that alone, you're protecting yourself, right? Like, you're not relying on anybody else.
Absolutely. Take, you know, control your own destiny and take care of your business. Then they've been doing that for the most part of the season with, like, the under 500 teams. And these teams aren't necessarily under 500, but they are in that sort of take care of business mode. That's what I would love to see. I would like to see them maybe establish a little bit of a home court advantage. The fan base obviously provides the atmosphere of the home court advantage, but I'd like to see their home record be a little bit better. But their away record is pretty great, so it all evens out at least. And I guess most importantly, I just want to see them really establish, like, some good, some good routines and maybe a good rotation to start thinking about getting towards a playoff series or into a postseason. Just finding a rotation that works and with the bench minutes, get building some confidence there and maybe, you know, seeing internally what you have, like, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if the coaching staff right now is analyzing, you know, and the front office, they're analyzing all that during this All-Star break. And, you know, we'll see when they come back out next week, if someone, you know, like Kessler Edwards starts cracking the rotation, getting some minutes or Keon Ellis or, we'll just kind of see what happens. But just seeing, like, you know, everyone was disappointed that we didn't have a new player to, you know, add into the mix, but there's still ways to make tweaks that can be exciting and for the better. So we'll just kind of see what they have in store for us for the second half.
All right. Thank you guys for joining me today and sharing all that about the first 50 plus games of the season and your thoughts and your feelings going forward. Do you want to go ahead and tell everybody where they can find you on Twitter? And we'll close it out.
I am at Megalu2U, MEGALUTOU on Twitter. And I'm also in the Cowbell Talk spaces after games. And I have a Spaces podcast as well, that where we read books and talk about them once a month. So if anyone has an interest in that, that's pretty fun also.
And you can find me on Twitter at TrevCosey23. And you can also find me on Instagram if you want to. I'm there too. You can get some occasional puppy content.
And if you're a Giants fan, definitely make sure you follow Trevor, because he's where I get all my Giants news during the season. So you get a 2-for-1 there.
Yeah, I have my little beam here. And I might be lighting it orange during baseball season. We'll see, because the beam's going to get lonely in the off season.
I love it. All right. Thank you guys again for joining us, and go Kings.